I'm not sure if this happens to you as much as it does me, but there are times where I hear the same word or phrase a couple of times in a week or a day, kind of out of nowhere. And it really makes me wonder, where have I been to miss this new thing? Has this happened to you some? That's what this Tinder thing, app, was for me. Sometime last spring, I was watching a show, and it kind of started with one of the main characters, young guy, who was swiping. He started by saying, swipe left, left, ooh, right, left, left. And I thought, what does that mean? Now, perhaps I would have cared less another week. But this week, just the day before, I hadn't shaved, and I had looked in the mirror, and lo and behold, there was a good patch of gray right there. Starting to see in myself these pieces that I am missing out on the generation that comes after me, and thinking, I am not that old yet. So I needed to know what this was, this kind of zeitgeist. And sure enough, later in the week, there was another comic who was talking about it. And then, of course, NPR would talk about it in a story. It would be written up in The Atlantic and Slate and so on. So Tinder, this app that we're talking about, began in 2012. And in theory, and it's funny because I meant to do something different this week, but I didn't care enough to do it. I thought I shouldn't talk about the app without ever having seen it. So I told my partner, my wife, I'm going to download this, but you should be there. But then we never did because we have a two-year-old and I just never had time to. But it's an app on the phone, and the premise, and some of you probably know this, I trust, I hope, the premise is that you connect with people by seeing their profile, and if you like them, you swipe right. And if you don't, you swipe left. At least I think I have that correct. That's the basics of it. Now, this app is no different than any number of things that help people connect. But for some reason, maybe because there's not a whole lot else going on in the world, there's not climate change or racism or sexism, but for some reason, we're spilling a lot of ink about Tinder right now. And how it leads to relationships or not, and what it means in our lives. And that's part of why I thought it would be interesting to pick this up. So in our world, especially when it comes to dating and connecting with people, this is a world where people need to stand out. In reading about Tinder and how many people connect, so by 2014, there are over 1 billion swipes a day. I can't begin to imagine. Just think of your thumb going across a phone enough that that would happen. But people do it somewhat reflexively. People have designed robots to swipe for them, which is so funny to me. I don't know why, but it's, you know, I don't know. It's funny to me. So robots and algorithms based on what your preferences are. Billion swipes a day. But because there are so many swipes, you can't just be regular, plain, genuine. You have to stand out. One of my favorites, so you can go online and look at fun Tinder profiles. My favorite is the guy who's dressed up as a duck in a taco wearing a sombrero. That one's fun. Wouldn't you want to go on a date with that person? There are lots. That's Joan. Nice. Brian, you just outed yourself. Lots of interesting stories here about how people play this and the ways that they try to get themselves to stand out in the world. It's interesting, though. In many ways, it's taken this reality show nature of entertainment, of what we think we want to see, which so many of us kind of talk about but still tune into, we rubberneck and watch, though we really dislike it in a way, and we make it some piece of our day-to-day lives, even our political lives. Making our lives so captive to that you have to say something bombastic to get out there, to get in people's faces, it works. It gets hits, it can make you viral, but is it useful? Depends on what useful is. one of the important components of Tinder, in a way that separates it from many dating websites or apps or other things, is that both people must opt in their interest for the relationship. And I think this is interesting. It's a way of knowing that both people are somewhat vested or committed. Dan Schindel, writer for the LA Times, penned this when he wrote, "I always swipe right. I realized what a waste of time Tinder would be if I actually looked at and gave serious consideration to every single profile that popped up, and so I decided to swipe right to everyone and just see who also swiped right and go with that." So it's interesting, there's this premise that both people must share interest in one another, and yet still there are people like Dan, God bless Dan, who just swipe right no matter what, not having interest necessarily, not even paying attention to the world around them, but just wanting the opportunity. This component of just trying to get in the door comes up lots of times, not just in relationships, but it can come up when we're looking for jobs and how do we get our resumes out there. It can come up when we're looking for houses and friends and churches. How do we connect people? How are we seen amongst the people we want to care for us and hear us? The other piece of Tinder that amazes me is how some of it has been adopted into our language. You've seen this with other things at this point. We talk about friending things or liking things in a way that we would not have done that 10 years ago or however long ago. We share things to people's walls. Even people use this sometimes in daily conversation. I've heard someone, since talking about Tinder earlier in the spring, since I started taking notes on this, someone talked about, "We'll swipe right on that and we'll see if we both like it." Many years ago when I was in graduate school, we were in a very heady conversation because, of course, all ministers are very serious. We take ourselves seriously. And one of my good friends, in like a gut-wrenching discussion, said, "I want to double-click on that for a minute." And I just buried my head in my hands to stifle my laughter because I'm not good at hiding that. And I said, "I've never heard that phrase before. You want to..." I mean, I have, right? We do that on our computers all the time. We want to open something, unpack it, see what's in there. But man, have I never said, "I'm going to double click on that" in a conversation. We start to integrate this technology into our daily life, and somehow that's useful. And I wonder if it doesn't start to lose track of some of our humanity. If we don't start to dehumanize one another by thinking that we can just act as though we're interacting with computers and technology. Even this image, Tinder, you're looking at connecting with someone long term, possibly, looking at creating a life with them, but you can dismiss their life with the movement of a thumb, one inch to the left or one inch to the right. It's amazing how that would never matter to many generations before us, and how just an inch would seem not to matter to most of us, and yet it can mean all the world's difference. So, if you're plugged into the news electronically, you've been hearing this or reading this hand-wringing over Tinder and its role in relationship building, relationship breaking, whatever. This sermon isn't that. There are good things about Tinder and bad things, just as there are good things about matchmakers and blind dates and bumping into someone on the street, and there are bad things about all of those. One of the guiding statements of my life, theologically, one of my founding kind of guiding principles, which I also think demonstrates our faith in action, is that it's not a question of yes or no, but how. So for me, it's not a question of whether technology should or shouldn't play a role in our lives. It will, probably. It does. The question is simply, how will it play a role? What role will we let it play? How much of ourselves do we give over to it? And that is, at least in some way, how I wind up with this suggestion to swipe right on life. It just hit me as really ironic that I had to do that to get to my next page. We really get sucked into technology, guys. It's not cool. All right. Practice what you preach, Scott. Practice what you preach. All right, so back to Dan Schindel. You remember Dan from the LA Times? He said, swiping right on Tinder, this is, he just swipes right to everyone. Swiping right on Tinder is a big yes to possibilities, which is why he swipes right to everything, but it's also a yes to vulnerability. He writes about how dating is to be vulnerable, or even attempting to date, even attempting to converse with someone, finding out what your interests are, and if you're looking at having dinner. But the truth is, isn't all of life vulnerable? To live and to be open in any moment to what may come, to not shield ourselves every moment, isn't that vulnerability? To meet new people and tell our stories, whether we form a 5-minute relationship or a 50-year one, that's to be vulnerable. And it's in those relationships that the most powerful life-saving moments can be found, those moments that can spur our growth, pick us up off the ground after a fall, and help us find and savor happiness. But it takes that reaching out. It takes the big risk Eileen Karpeles would talk about. It takes bombing sometimes. Bad dates, bad friendships, screwing up, asking forgiveness, and coming back. Some of you who are plugged into television rather than computers might know that Stephen Colbert, the actor, recently changed jobs. Soon he'll be taking over on CBS at a network show. And as he was talking about his new job, someone was saying, well, how will you make this yours? How will you invent yourself again? And he talked about what drove him creatively. It was fascinating, I think, for anyone who's an artist of any sort. There was a good piece, a nugget of truth there, but it's a truth that we can all hold on to. He talked about how you had to be out there and not only risk the bomb, not only risk being out in front of people and just falling flat on your face, but to love it. Not in a sort of, oh, get up there again, you'll do better next time. Not in a, oh, we all do okay, we all make mistakes, sort of love it. But to truly, fully love it, for that's life. The bombs. Even in those moments of our failures, that's living life. Could it be that we take those moments, the good and the bad, whatever they are, relationships, work, school, health, and learn to love all of them for what they are. Not seeking to dismiss them immediately, swiping left as soon as we see something we think we don't like, but embracing them all. Dan Schindel says that he swipes right on everything. Some people might use that for the dating app and might work well for them. Swiping right on everything in life has some real difficulties. First, I think we understand that there's a difference between accepting everything and being open to anything. David Allen wrote, "You can do anything but not everything," and our own theology encourages us to be open to new spiritual truths, but we don't necessarily take them all on. They must bear some truth to our own lives and souls. They must seek to be welcoming, friendly, open, and hopeful. Taking on everything also involves some comfort and privilege that not all of us have in the moment. If you're fighting for survival, whether it's a question of having enough money to eat, how to pay the rent, how to get medicine, how not to be abused or hurt, then the question of whether you're ready to take a big risk on a new adventure may not be the one on the forefront of your mind. You may worry more about your health, your safety. And yet, having been in that place myself at times, it's also important to be open because that's one of the ways we get out of those places. The challenge for us is not in constantly jumping off cliffs for the sake of jumping off cliffs, but in being open and looking for those times to leap when we can to go higher. not just because, but to reach some vision of the life we hope to live, some greater purpose. We cannot grow without taking risks, being open to new ideas and peoples and experiences. The other key lesson here for me is that whatever technology we develop is there to serve the deeper need of making connections. Part of the drumbeat against Tinder itself is that it doesn't usually connect people on a deeper level. Instead, it encourages people to blithely judge one another off of a couple sentences and a picture, even if it is a duck and a taco and a sombrero. Maybe it encourages you to have just a night out or a casual encounter. Maybe it encourages you not to even connect truly and intimately when the moment's there. Davis Webster writes about this for the New York Times. He says, one of the best things about Tinder is this: in a generation in which the content of a text message is often less important than how long you waited to send it, Tinder allows intimacy without any stakes. It allows intimacy without any stakes. How many of you can imagine intimacy ever happening without any stakes? He goes on to say, if things get too serious or boring, or if you mess up, there's always someone new to swipe on. He talks about someone that he found over Tinder, and he kept trying to message one another. Oh, yes, we should meet. And finally, they had the opportunity to meet. They had exchanged hundreds of messages for dozens of hours over 5 days. Now that the roads were clear, he writes, and I was mobile, enabling us to get together in real life, we could be held accountable for our words and affection. And that proved to be a burden neither of us could bear. People with differing needs and ethics around relationships, casual and sustained, can pick these up in different places. How we interact with this, with intimacy, is different. But that deeper, lasting connection is something I think so many of us are looking for. In a world of 7 billion people, so often we look around and feel alone and isolated, even in a room that's full of people. The difficulty, of course, being that it takes time, that it can't happen quickly. It's also true that if we think we can just start over, or if we think we can just move on to the next thing or person who will always be better, we are missing out on making something great in the present. There's a little bit of that Buddhism that comes up for me there. How can we stop to accept what is in the moment without trying to control, without trying to find the perfect is somewhere and just be? I think so often in life we do something. I'm going to use another technological term, one that I've made up, a portmanteau, sort of a Yelpification. How many of you go to Yelp ever so often? I go like every day. I want to know what other people have said about something. I want to know how it's rated and reviewed. And we do that a lot in life. The difficulty being sometimes we do that with people, and we wonder if there's the next person down the street who will be better. The next lover, the next teacher, the next partner, minister, the next anyone. Yeah, with mechanics and doctors it makes sense, but what about partners or children? When it comes to intimate, connected relationships, is it fair to others or even to ourselves to always be wanting? However it is that we reach out to find connections, and truthfully, there are so many ways, the hope is that we can find them and hold on to them. For myself, this is a real part of my theological humanism. Humanism, this belief that we are here on earth to do the agency and the work of the world. Us humans, nobody's going to do it for us. No one's going to make me match up with anyone else or put me in just the right spot. I decide that. Much of what happens in our life is not in our control. We know that. We see nature around us changing. We see systems and other people changing. But we do own a small part of autonomy and power. And so the question is, how do we use that to reach out, to connect with one another? Not to dismiss them offhand, not to ignore them because they may seem too boring or too strange. That their terms, whether it's terms of dating or theology or politics, are different than ours, and so we don't want to encounter them. How do we build a world in which we can all be there, even if we're not so tightly wound? As I thought about Tinder in this language of swiping left and right, I think for many of you who may have one of these type phones or tablets, you've gotten used to that at this point. It's been scary to me to see my son, 2 years old, learn how to do that really quickly, faster than I can. That image of swiping left and right happens quickly. But this summer, as I worked on the sermon, there's another image that popped in my head, and it's the image of someone's hand reaching over and holding the hand of another. I don't know why that keeps coming to my mind as swiping left or right. It's not conscious, I'm not trying to rewire my thinking, but for some reason, that's the image I'm left with. And so often, that's the image or the feeling, the support that I think we're looking for through all of these different things, through technology, through institutions and churches, through life. There's this meditation from Mark Morrison Reed. I've offered it to you before, so I offer part of it to you again because it's so useful. He writes, "We need not fear death, but life. Empty lives. Loveless lives. We need to fear not death, but squandering the lives we've been miraculously given. Let me die holding the hand of one I love, and recalling that I tried to love and was loved in return. Let me die remembering that life has been good, and that I did what I could, so that I can live, savor, and love with all my heart. We have but one life guaranteed to us. And even in it, we have no moment beyond the present promised to us. Sure, there's much to fear, much to anticipate and plan for, much to hold and process. But there's also much to embrace and experience, much to celebrate, newness all around that we get to help co-create with other humans and with that which is divine around us. We will get hurt. Things will be broken. There is no question about if. It's only a matter of when, and a matter of what we will do when we face the challenge before us." Eileen Karpalis was right. The choice is ours. Those who risk much lose much. But they are also the ones who will only ever win. What is it you would like to win? What is it you'd like to reach for and grab this morning? Is it joy, connection, a peaceful world, a safe world, a whole world? I invite you to think about that as you rise this morning for our closing song.